at the face on Fitzgerald there, just glowering at O'Sullivan. And O'Sullivan glowering straight back at him, scheduled for 10. Anything could happen.
Hi, I'm Gary Spike O'Sullivan, and you're listening to Four Pumps Podcast. Kinetic Lafkin, I want you.
They are loading up right from the start. O'Sullivan just teeing off, dropping the hands, with a taunting, showing his confidence. Look how low the hands are, though, from O'Sullivan.
Well, O'Sullivan made a point before the introductions. Maybe it was a good point to make, but I don't like the way he did that. And he's making a second point now. He's landed solid shots straight away. He's bringing them up from his thighs. Fitzgerald doesn't see them coming. A real solid left hand there landed. But I think he wants to show Fitzgerald that he's not bothered whatsoever about the power he possesses.
And that's a good uppercut. Absolutely nailed Fitzgerald there. Remember, it's O'Sullivan that's carrying that extra weight. And it's counted there. Right hand. Flattened. Fitzgerald, who's going to struggle to beat this count. He's all out of the place. He's absolutely gone. And O'Sullivan is celebrating a first round stoppage. Explosive. Fitzgerald. Just look at what it's done to Fitzgerald. O'Sullivan has just wiped him out. There was a warning there earlier. He didn't heed it, and he got him with the second one.
Hello and welcome to the Four Pumps Irish Boxing Podcast with me, your host Kevin Byrne, my co-host Kieran Gallagher, and our boxing expert Eric Donovan. We're sitting here in the Celtic Warriors gym in Corduff in Dublin with victorious Spike O'Sullivan and Stephen Ormond, who's hoping to be equally victorious in a world title eliminator on December the 13th in Sheffield against Terry Flanagan. I want to start with you, Spike. You've just come from a massive derby win against, a kind of civil war clash with Anthony Fitzgerald. Stunning first round knockout. And you've been smiling about it ever since, I presume.
Yeah, it was very nice to get the win, you know, especially in such good fashion. You know, couldn't have went better for me on the night. And it was a grudge there for many years, and you know, it was a fight I was looking forward for many years, and just glad that it went well for me, you know.
How does it compare to other victories in your career? You know, you've won kind of minor belt, or you've won belts across in the USA, and you know, you've been Irish champion. And but how did this compare? Was it did it mean a lot more because of all the smack talk and everything that happened in the ring or before the ring?
You want to be careful, no, Kev, or you'll be getting uppercut yourself. I won a nice title, the World WBO champ. International title. I was ranked number 4 in the world, so I'll have to correct you there. Steve, give me an uppercut for me, will you?
I was thinking about earlier on in your career when you went to the USA and you were noted as a world champion in the USA. Sorry, I did neglect your WBO International title, and you were close to getting a shot.
Yeah.
Do you reckon the momentum from Saturday's win can propel you to another kind of major title shot?
I believe so, yeah. You know, Sky is a great platform, and you know, I think I got more recognition by fighting on Sky, and also by beating a guy that's well known to be really tough, which he is, you know, Anthony Fitzgerald. And he's been the distance with Hassan Adam, who's former WBO world champion, and Andy Lee, who we all know quite well, you know, world class fighter. And he gave those lads a lot of trouble, you know, and I beat him in good fashion, and I think so it propels me up the ladder. And we're hearing lots of talk now that there's a lot of promoters out there interested in doing the work with me, you know.
Like, I know you're a keen soccer player in your youth, and you know, you're a goal scorer as well. Yeah. How does a first round knockout compare to a goal? Or, you know, it must be the most joyous feeling in boxing to get your night done in such a massive grudge match and get it done in such clinical fashion. You know immediately you're going to be talked to, and you've got a few quid on yourself as well.
Yeah, it was sweet. All in all, it was really good. You know, a knockout, like scoring a goal or any sport. I love all sports, and I just love winning. And you know, it was great. The knockout was a nice knockout as well. It was a pretty spectacular one, if I may say so myself. You know, it's I've been told it's in for a knockout of the year, and I'm in the front running with Carl Froch's knockout over George Groves. You know, so that's makes it all the sweeter. And you know, it's a tough game to make money in, and having a bet, a nice one like that, was very sweet as well. Put icing on the cake for me.
Yeah, it's good company to keep. I believe our colleague here, Eric, also has a few first round knockouts on his record against boys from the same club as Anthony's, I believe, even. Eric.
Yeah, well, not exactly first round knockouts, but first round stoppages. I had a couple of them over the years, like, you know, and they can be very disheartening, I suppose, for your opponent, you know. Your pride is injured and it's hurt, and, you know, it's going to take a lot to come back from that. I suppose, Spike, one thing that really impressed me with your fight was the comfort that you showed in the first round. You were so comfortable that you walked out, immediately dropped your hands. Tell me what was going on for you there, because it looked like you had this just in the palm of your hand. What was going on? Where did that comfort come from?
Well, I think it was the best preparation of my life. I was, for the first time, I think I had the really and truly world-class sparring. You know, the gym is buzzing here at the moment. You know, I think Luke Keeler is a great one for the future. I've had a fantastic sparring with him and with bigger blokes like Stevie Collins Jr. and Ian Timms. You know, and it's been brilliant preparation. We've had Frank Buglioni, the super middleweight European champion, Martin Murray, who should be maybe two times world champion. You know, sparring of that calibre gave me great confidence, and I was able to hold my own with whoever I may have been in the ring with. I was more than able to hold my own, and I feel that I'm more confident than ever. I've upped my training to 6 days a week. I'm also doing a new program with the Mardik in UCC, which I think has benefited me greatly. I'm working on mobility and recovery, a thing I haven't done before, so I think it's enabled me to train harder. I felt in really good condition. I felt very strong. I got a good chin, I know that, and I've never been on the ground. You know, I've never really been rocked, besides the time when Billy Joe bust my eardrum. That's when I felt rocked, but I wasn't actually properly rocked with a shot to the chin. It was my ear, so I felt like I could take what Anthony had to offer. I knew he was a stronger man and the better fighter, and I thought I'd lure him in and knock him out. And that's why I was so comfortable.
Absolutely, you certainly looked a complete package in there. Just wondering, what kind of benefits now has that been for you in boxing like that on Sky Sports? The perfect punch, the perfect finish into a fight. I had a sneaky peek at your Twitter followers. I think you jumped 1,000 or 1,500 followers in the space of a couple of days. That's the kind of benefits that your profile is getting from the Sky. So can you talk about that from the media perspective?
Yeah, it's been a crazy few days after the fight. You know, I've been getting attention like never before, even though I won a WBO title, as we mentioned before, in Upton Park. I think there was like 40,000 people at the fight, and David Hay was there, but it still doesn't compare to fighting on Sky Sports. You know, it's more, everyone views it, everybody seems to have seen it, you know, and it's unbelievable. I've had 270,000 views of combined between my Facebook page and my Twitter page, which is mind-boggling. Like, and I'd like to take this opportunity as well to thank everybody for their support. It's genuinely overwhelming, you know, and it pulls in the heartstrings. It's kind of, I find it quite emotional. All the well wishes from everybody. It's just you know, thanks very much, everybody, for that.
Was that something you were bearing in mind, Spike? Like, you'd mentioned to me before the fight that there was a temptation for you to go out there and maybe give him a bit of a lesson over a few rounds, give him a bit of a hide, and in the end you got a showreel knockout, and I mean, that's arguably going to propel your career even further. Was it something you were conscious of going into the ring, that you wanted to kind of make the most of the opportunity as opposed to just get caught up in the rivalry?
Absolutely. I was never going to get caught up in the rivalry. You know, I'd never get involved that way mentally. I think Anthony was sucked in a bit by it, but I'd never ever fall for that. I was looking to avail of the opportunity to fight on Sky Sports. I was out to make the most of it and put on a performance of my career, which I think probably was in the end. You know, I was out to take the chance and do the very best I could and put it on, doing style, which I think I did.
Like Eric alluded to there, you had the hands behind the back doing your Roy Jones Jr. impression. Like, was it something that you wanted to make a point of to say, not only am I the better boxer, I'm the man with the more talent here, I'm the man who's willing and able to headline in the future for big Irish cards?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been kind of in the shade of the likes of Matthew Macklin and Andy Lee for many years now, and something that kind of, you know, kind of annoys me, I suppose, really, if you want a better word. You know, I feel like I can beat these guys, you know, and I was determined to go out there and, you know, make a statement and to show people not only am I, you know, a boxer or whatever they may view me of, but I've got more to my arsenal than people think. You know, Stephen Ormond, they're my gym mate, probably the hardest working fighter I've ever met in my entire life. You know, I could probably tell you that the lads in the gym over the years have been seeing me doing boxing and various different styles, and, you know, even that from Southpaw stance, and, you know, there's people don't get to see that, you know, and I felt Sky Sports was the perfect opportunity to show people that, and I made the most of it.
Now, as you can probably hear from the crack in the background, this is a pretty friendly gym. I've managed to avoid getting an uppercut from both guys so far since. But I want to bring in Stephen. You guys are long-time teammates here, and like we also spoke about how you know close you guys are to Ian Timms and Luke Keeler and new boy John O'Carroll and there's Steve Collins Jr. as well. But particularly on Spike, you were there at the fight the other night, and clearly you were kind of cheering for your teammate. But I want to know kind of what sort of a difference have you seen in Spike over the years from the guy you first met to the guy that's kind of sitting here with us now.
He's gone madder. He's improving all the time and he's doing extra work now. He's really pushing it in, you know. Even like on the Saturday, he's doing extra work back home in Cork and all. So it's 110% he's doing, you know. Yeah. He's still mad.
Still. But have you noticed any kind of change in his approach to the game?
Yeah, he's always been super confident, you know. But he's training more, you know. He's always there at the time and everything. He's putting everything into it, you know. Just more dedication. Because he knows how good he is.
Yeah. Do you feel it, like it does reflect good on the gym and it, on your own kind of, it brings everybody up. But do you feel that it's kind of, you're all in this together? Or yeah. Presumably.
This gym is like a family gym, you know. We all come great friends now for life. Like, that's the way it is. And I know it's an individual sport, but it's more of a family thing, you know. So if one fights, we all fight.
Yeah. So I presume the atmosphere coming into work ahead of your own world title eliminator against Terry Flanagan is like the family atmosphere in this gym makes it coming to work all the better, basically.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier, you know. As you can see here in the background now, all the crazy people, you know, but it blends in with the real sport anyway. But it's great, you know, all these fights coming up, all the lads, it's great to support them all. And I'm at the end of the year, you know, in December, so it's great to gives me a push every day in training, every day, keep going, watching all these lads doing the putting the work in and winning, you know.
Do you have any kind of one-upmanship on yourselves, or is everybody just nicely guiding each other to success? Is there any kind of like pressure to keep up the standard and keep up the winning?
Well, the middleweights here in the gym is unbelievable. Like, you know, it's competition. Every one of them, they spare each other. It's great, you know. And then I have John now sparring me, so like I'm getting that now as well, you know, because he's coming on so much. And just supporting each other, you know, it's the main thing. And
yeah. I believe you once boxed Eric here in an exhibition down on the tie,
right, yeah.
Collar.
Slippery like a snake he was. Very good, you know. Very good amateur. It's very hard to hit.
Stephen, going back to that, the end of your amateur career, you look to me like a guy that was unhappy at the end of his career. You know, you were 3-time Irish senior champion. You know, you've boxed in major multinational championships, world and European championships, but you didn't look happy. And when you switched over to the professional game, it was like a new lease of life for you. Can you tell me about that? What was the change for you?
It's like, I was missing something, you know, at the amateurs. You always believed that I could do it in the professionals. You always wanted to do it. I kept it later and later. I should have gone earlier, but then I got a chance. And it's a different sport, as you know. Amateur and professional boxing is different, so it was like a fresh start to me. And someone wanted to be as a world champ, so it was kind of pushed me, you know, all the way.
Absolutely. And you know, you're on the fringe now of a big title, a world title shot. You have to get past Terry Flanagan first. What's your read on Terry Flanagan? He is a southpaw. How do you prepare to beat him?
We're working on a lot of things. You can see new lads today again, more southpaws. But he's a good UK fighter, you know. He's southpaw, he's unbeaten, but they're the challenges I want, you know, because you offered me 30 matches in a rematch. So I didn't want to do that, you know. Being there, I want challenge. We asked for the fight.
You want to move forward?
Yeah, I want to test myself. See, I don't really in this game say, what if I, how good was I when I took a chance? This was all about. Most fighters don't know that, you know. You have to take chances.
Yeah.
To prove to self how good you are, you know.
Ask Spike, does he think this fight's clearly a difficult fight for Stephen? Do you think he's correct to take it? Do you think he's mad in the head like he said you were?
I think I might be a small matter. Maybe. It's debatable. But I think Stephen is probably the best. Definitely on his night, he could beat any lightweight in the world, in my opinion, you know, anybody at all. I think he's right to take the fight. I'm confident he could beat anybody on his night, you know. But I think I'm going to be actually getting kicked out of my gaff over going over his fights. I've had all Stephen's fights, you know, I'm his biggest fan, and, you know, we're friends for life, as he said before, and the camaraderie in this gym is it's just amazing. You know, we're like friends for life with a lot of us here, and I got the wild fights, and I'm sure it's going to be another success for Stephen on the night.
You mentioned the camaraderie there, Spike, and Kevin was asking you about kind of the feeling that I suppose is in the gym as well, Stephen. Like, the cliche goes that it's a lonely sport and you're in the ring on your own, but is it a confidence booster? I suppose when you look at your own career and Spike's as well, you're both at an age where kind of you have to deliver at this stage. So yeah. When you see Spike delivering in such an emphatic fashion, does that actually boost your confidence as well?
Yes. Every day in a gym boosts your confidence, you know, being around people training. And as you see him going to the corner, we have a whole army going to the corner. You know, it's just, it's a great LLA team we have. I know it's an individual sport, but the team we have, it's, it helps you a lot coming to the ring, you know, with all the people behind you.
And can you speak to us just a bit about working with Pascal? Look, I mean, it seems as though he's ideal for your style. When you turned over, you obviously had a bit of an experience there in America as well, and you're quite, I suppose, where that goes, the stereotype of an American style boxer. Yeah.
When I came back from America, like, I was over there and I just met with Pascal and my Uncle Greg brought me over, and the same kind of training routine, everything was identical to what they do in America. So this is the place to be. He's the only one in Ireland, I think, who actually trains that way, you know. As you can see the success out of the club over, really American style. And it's real laid back here, you know. As you know, on the Irish team, it's real strict about weight and shit, you know. But it's more laid back here. Like, as you say, it's individual sport, but it's like a family thing. You're going to make it, you're going to do what you have to, you can relax in here as well, you know.
Stephen, you're a pretty modest guy and you don't really blow your own trumpet that much, but can you tell us about what you think your own strengths are in the ring and why that will hopefully, you know, trouble Flanagan and deliver a world title shot for yourself?
I'll be honest, about blowing my own trumpet, we just don't think any lightweights are there. Move the way I move. Like a boxing fight and in the UK as well, like, you know, they're basic stand-up fighters, you know. They haven't got the natural movement they have. That's what I think is going to win it for me.
We saw the atmosphere at the Three Arena the other night, and you've long been trumpeted as kind of the successor to Bernard Dunn. It's 5 years since Bernard Dunn kind of filled the arena. We saw the atmosphere the other night that Spike generated. I take it, you know, that kind of planted a seed in your head. You want a bit of that, and with Spike as well being successful, kind of what are you dreaming of on the horizon? Kind of title shots for each of you in 2015.
Yeah, I want to be a world champion. Have big nights here, you know. Like, the support you get is unbelievable. And then same with Spike too, the whole gym, you know. Big titles. The world titles are what I aim for. We're all aiming for the same thing. And then putting on big shows.
Did you go to the Conor McGregor UFC event in July? Yeah, I know he's a former sparring partner of yours at this gym as well. He's another guy who's been.
Yeah, haven't been, though. I've seen it on telly. It was actually away at the time. But might be going to the next one actually in January. See what happens, you know. But unbelievable. He's doing great, you know. He's doing great things. But well, it's good, and his mindset as well is unbelievable. The way he's just so confident, you know, you have to be.
Just wondering, you know, looking back over the decades of boxing in Ireland, we seem to always have this one particular boxer who comes and lifts the nation's spirits. Like, for example, Barry McGuigan, and you know, the crowd and the country gets behind him, and then there's a big gap and a pause, and then you had like Steve Collins and another pause, and then Bernard Dunn, but. Something tells me now that there's a blanket of boxers coming through, you know, that we've never had before, from the likes of yourself and Spike, Andy Lee, Macklin, who has, you know, also been there. You know, there's the likes of Conrad Cummins, Carl Frampton, world champion, Jason Quigley, you know, etc. The list goes on. Do you get the feeling that maybe we're going to start seeing some big major shows and maybe multiple world champions in Ireland?
I think so now. It's going to change now. Everything is, all the fighters are coming through. They're getting more confident in the professional game from switching over. Mm-hmm. And you've seen there last week, the people came to the show, you know. It's everything's going to change now, I believe so. It's going to be a lot more shows and a lot more world champs at the same time, same era.
In that regard, Spike, I suppose you're coming off a win. You're probably going to be looking at trying to follow that up with the idea of fight. You've been chasing after Chris Eubank Jr. for a while. He has the fight with Billy Joe Saunders coming up. I mean, if you're picking your dream fight, would it be a Celtic Warrior against a Eubank down in Mill Street again, or what would you be looking for?
Yeah, that'd be awesome, Ciarán. It'd be awesome to get that fight. I'm actually going to be ringside because Frank Bullioni and Steve Collins Jr. are fighting that night, and I've become good mates with Billy Joe now as well, so I'm going to go over and watch that, and I'm going to be keeping a keen eye on it, and I'd be giving Eubank a bit of grief there, you know.
Lob the gob on him after the show, maybe.
Yeah, look, he's pretty good. He's a pretty good looking guy. He's now got nice lips, nicer lips than Fitzy. just got, and he's got a nicer body as well. To be fair to him, like, you know, he's nice. Thanks, Steve. Going back to camaraderie in the gym and you know, as regards people trying to trump each other and all that, like, you know, there is a small bit of jealousy in the gym, you know. The lads are obviously jealous because I'm the best looking one in the lot, like, you know. So Timothy there in the background laughing like he was the best looking till I came, so yeah.
Professional boxers are also vain. One challenge that proposition was asked of me by Pascal when I came in. He said, come down here, you're a southpaw, and spar Stephen in a, you know, getting ready for his world title eliminator. I had a look at the boxing ring, and I've seen bigger phone boxes, and I said, no thank you. I'm a counter puncher, and I like to, you know, stick and move and get out there, but I don't think there's anywhere to run or hide in that ring in there. It's like a phone box, so I don't envy these guys at all, so fair play.
Actually, on that point for your own preparation, Stephen, I mean, boxers are always asked about the future and looking ahead for fights. This is obviously a massive fight in the sense that the world title eliminator, so obviously the future is on your mind and in the ultimate reward. Like, I mean, is it difficult now at this stage of your career not to be looking ahead and saying, I've got a title fight now once I win this? And obviously Flanagan's quite a challenge to overcome.
Oh, every fight to me is my last fight, you know, because that's why I look at it. But I do visualise being a world champion. You can see it. I can see it now. You can see me going through this and being a world champion, even the next way after that, you know. But we're actually going to focus on this fight first. But yeah, let's be truthful about it. I do see it in two fights down, I'll be world champion, you know.
Is Spike's bookie giving you good odds on yourself as well?
Ah, big time, yeah. I'm going to start betting out in the future. This fella is going to be the shark, you know. But yeah, the good odds he has. He's already has the Paddy Powers booked out anyway.
Yeah, because there was a few kind of standout moments from your fight with Fitzgerald. Apart from the first round knockout, there was the fact that you had money on yourself to do the job in the first round, and you won yourself a tidy packet. I believe your brother won even more. There was the stool as well. It was just one, like, we anticipated a crazy fight that would probably go a few rounds, and we didn't really know what would happen. Clearly you did. But was it as kind of mad an event as you kind of, or you kind of looked at it more calm? I thought it would be a bit crazy. But I guess the things that happened, the things that transpired, did make it just unmissable.
I suppose reflecting on it, like, it was a bit crazy, you know. But I like to stay calm, that's the way, you know, be calm, cool and collected, you know. And I suppose it was a nice shoulder roll out of me, though, wasn't it? A shoulder roll, the stool. First.
It was the trap. You gave Anthony Fitzgerald the GA style shoulder at the start, yep. Just to rattle him up. You said that was, you told us afterwards why. Could you expand on why you did that?
Well, I'm a Cork man, you know, and a friend of mine there, Dermot O'Sullivan, I used to see him throwing the old shoulder in the GAA matches, and I played a bit of GAA myself as well, and, you know, he tried to intimidate me, Anthony, you know. I think he's a bit of a bully, you know, in the ring he tries to be a bully, and I'd never be prepared to be bullied by anybody, and, you know, I read a lot of boxing books as well, and, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard used to dance around the ring and try to come towards his opponent as he came in the ring and get him to move out of his way, and he felt he'd get the psychological edge. But I wasn't going to be moving, and I said I'd go one further and give him the old Cork-style shoulder.
So you mentioned Dermot, the Rocco Sullivan, his namesake is here. Would you think about any tactics like that yourself for fights, or is it the type of thing that just depends on the personality involved, Stephen?
It depends on the both fighters, you know. I don't really think of that just till you get in the ring, because everything can change, you know. Just keep the options open, you know. That can happen. He can bring a steel with me to the fight, so we'll see.
But I could never picture you, Stephen. I could never picture you throwing shoulders or talking trash talk. I don't know if that's in your makeup or your
nature. I just want to get in there and fight. That's all I want to do, you know. That's probably where you always get told, like, you should be even more talking about things and calling people out and that, but I just want to get in there and fight, you know.
Yeah.
That's where I am.
Speaking of that, Spike, of that shoulder, like, I've observing the build-up to your fight with yourself and Fitzgerald, you were more involved in the animosity. You're taking part in the banter, in the trash talk, and then just up until the last week, maybe 10 days before, I noticed a change in you. You kind of stepped back a little bit. You were talking, but you looked to be a little bit more controlled. I'm just wondering, under all of that, were you chomping at the bit?
No, I like to keep nice and calm and cool and just hold my fire for the ring, you know, on the night, because I think just wasting energy unnecessarily. You know, I leave all that to him and getting upset, and so I gave him a little kiss. You know, he was trying to bop me and push me, but you know, I got inside. He said, actually, he texted me there and If anybody wants to meet up for a date,
you invite him for a cup of tea afterwards. Do you think that's going to happen, or are you going to go for a drink together? Or you said all the animosity is over, which is kind of the great thing about boxing. You see all the horrible rivalries, like, you know, you see even Hay and Chisora, like the stuff that was happening between them, but they're hugging in the ring afterwards. And we saw yourself and Fitzgerald said, you know, you'll meet up afterwards again. Is that going to happen?
Definitely, I'd be open, but you know, and I think he came up to the dressing room like after he came out of the shower, and he was waiting in the dressing room, and you know, we had a genuine conversation. And I think it was genuine from both sides, I believe. Definitely from my side, and I think Anthony was the same, to be honest. I give him absolutely fierce credit, you know, and for that, you know, it's easy to be humble when you've won, like, it's easy to be humble and be nice. But he was beaten in front of his home crowd and beaten, you know, pretty badly, and I have the utmost respect for him, and I genuinely take my hat off and I say it, well done to Anthony, you know, and I think he deserves massive credit for the way he acted in the aftermath of the fight. He must have been very disappointed, but he was very sporting and very respectful, and you know, I give him top credit for that, you know.
So Stephen, just another question that I have about Spike talks about the atmosphere there, and I suppose Anthony having home advantage and having all the crowd behind him, it ultimately didn't stand for anything for Anthony. You're heading away now for a fight, and you won't have the home support behind you. How much of a difference does it make for you when it depends on the venue that you fight in?
It doesn't matter to me. That's, I know that I've heard you say that, but it really doesn't matter. I'm well used to now. Even in the Irish team saying we've gone away, just in the ring there, it's me and my opponent, you know. It's, that's the way I look at it, and that's the way it is. But like, I do look forward to them times going out with all the Irish fans cheering me on. That's what the goal is, you know. But at the moment, they've got to do it the hard way and earn it the hard way, you know. But that's what it's got to be, you know.
Just for Stephen there as well, he's been there before when he went. He fought Derry Matthews in Liverpool in his own backyard, and it was of absolutely no problem to him, and he put on an unbelievable performance, and I don't think it's going to be a problem to him again. And we're with Pascal, he encourages us, like looking back at his brother Steve when he fought in Manchester, you know, I don't think it's a problem to us here in the gym. We're psychologically, we're very, very strong in this gym, and it's not a problem to us, and they can't get in the ring with him. It's only yourself and the opponent. Something Pascal said to me, it was a very hostile environment in the Tree Arena on Saturday, and I was getting a lot of abuse from ringside, and things, you know, were getting a bit heated. Pascal said, once that bell rings, it's only you and him in the ring, and the crowd, they're nothing, you know. So I think
I've just got one final question for you guys. Who's going to be the first world champion out of the two of you guys?
Is that a race?
Stephen's in a better position. He's you know, he has his world title limited or signed for, it's his next fight, and I think Stephen will be the next world champion.
He's going on there to Buki any time soon, you know, watch out.
Put a tracker on him.
Spike and Stephen, we really appreciate you taking time out to speak to Four Thumps. We wish you well on your challenge and your pursuit for a world title, Stephen against Terry Flanagan. We wish you the best of luck, and Spike, whatever's next in line for you, we hope you continue this fantastic form. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, lads. Appreciate
it. It started with a kiss.
O'Sullivan come out into the centre of the ring. You just thought it was in a different class to his opponent, and he pretty much proved that it wasn't a lucky punch, because he had landed at least three solid punches, in particular a solid left uppercut, you know, which he brought up from his hip. So good, we're seeing the sportsmanship now, which we're always pleased to see. But O'Sullivan came in like a man on a mission, and that was mission accomplished in record time. A big shot. I really look upon this as the fight of the night, possibly tonight. 10 torrid rounds, but first round stoppage, terrific from Gary O'Sullivan.
Okay, we've just heard from Gary Spike O'Sullivan and Stephen Armand. Some fantastic stuff here in the Celtic Warriors gym, where we're still sitting at the moment. Just going to have a bit of a roundup of last weekend's action at the Three Arena. Another fantastic sellout show, but a bit of a disappointment there at the headliner, with Matthew Macklin losing to Argentina's Jorge Sebastian Hoyland by a 10th round stoppage.
He needs a knockdown. But first, he's got to start winning a couple of rounds. It's been a while since that happened. And straight on him again.
You know, I said in the early stages,
got him. and he's been wiped out. Single punch, no count. Disaster for Mookie Macklin. Delight for Jorge Sebastian Highland, who celebrates. But all the air just got sucked out of this arena, and that was a shattering finish for Mathew Macklin. And is that the end of what's been a terrific career? That was a nasty knockout.
Yeah, there was a bit of poignancy in the air because the first fight of the night showed what could be the end of Oisín Féin as well, another kind of great Irish warrior who's had a lot of fight. He came to boxing unorthodox, was a soccer player, went to the USA, barely had an amateur fight, and ended up fighting some proper world champions like Spadafora, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., and he did well, and American as well. Like, Oisín's a friend of yours actually, Eric, isn't he?
Yeah, a former work colleague of mine as well. And Oisín, it's an incredible story. You know, he's absolutely no amateur background. And he had one fight or something, or one or two fights, and switched over, and PE school teacher in Oklahoma, became Oklahoma state champion, and fought all his way back to these shores, and gave us some great memorable nights in the stadium and on the undercards of some big shows, and again challenging these elite guys like Amir Khan, Chavez, and I suppose he can be very proud of the career he's had, because I don't know many boxers who've had the same career without any amateur background or amateur pedigree to help them along. So he should be very proud of himself, and whatever he does, we'd like to wish him well. So to Oisín Féin, on behalf of the Four Tomes Irish Boxing Podcast team, we wish you well.
Yeah, wish you well, Oisín. And at the other end of the scale, like, the headliner was Mathew Macklin. He's a lot younger than Oisín. He's just 32 years of age. He's not an old man, and he's got the mindset of a young man as well. But Mathew made his pro debut at 18, and it looked like a lot of fights over the years just caught up with him. He was outworked by Sebastian Highland and appeared to gas some time after the fourth round. That's kind of the end of his world title ambitions, losing that world title eliminator. I suppose we'll learn more about what Matthew's plans are, whether or not he'll continue to box. I know a lot of his close kind of confidants and friends and advisor would be advising him to retire, from what I've heard. Is trainer Joe Gallagher came out on record and said he wants him to retire. Mathew, I'm sure, will be announcing more about what he's doing soon, but I guess he was a great servant to boxing, and it was good for him to see him headline a show in Ireland. And there was one point at which I think it was somewhere around the 7th or the 8th, he was clearly visibly flagging, and then kind of a chant of ole 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 came around the ground. It was kind of, it was a poignant night, like, because it was the end of a couple of warriors, like.
Yeah, it's difficult to watch a boxer coming to the end of his career, especially a boxer like of the caliber of Mathew Macklin, who has brought so much joy to our lives, from boxing in world title fights, and he's never disappointed. He's always been in those classical fights where it's edge of the seat stuff, and even as far back as the fight with Jamie Moore and three world title attempts, and gallant attempts they were. He was unfortunate, really was unjustifiably robbed of that world title against Felix Sturm. So we can't undo that, but it's very sad to be remembered as the man that the world title slipped through his fingers. But just looking at Mathew from a personal perspective, if you looked at the last three fights that he's had, he certainly hasn't gone up, or he hasn't gone forward. He's actually gone backwards. He's deteriorated, and so it's hard for me to see him reclaim the same kind of form that he had a couple of years back. I think he's going in the opposite direction, so I think it would be a wise decision for him.
If we're going to speak hypothetically at the minute, there is one fight remaining for him, and it's Andy Lee. And we wish Andy Lee all the best in his world title fight next month, but let's say he isn't successful. I know Andy won't be thinking in that kind of terms, but if both of them are to come back and fight each other next year, like, Andy Lee wouldn't have as high a pace in his boxing as Highland. Do you think, Kieran, that's a fight that...
I suppose the biggest temptation is there's probably two fights, depending on the circumstances. One is how Andy gets on in his fight against Matt Karabov. If he wins, it's probably less likely he'll fight Mathew, because Mathew mightn't be an attractive opponent for Andy at this stage unless he wants the big Irish domestic fight. But then also there's Martin Murray, who has the Gennady Golovkin fight, and you'd have to rank on Golovkin's previous performances as a heavy, heavy favourite, and more than likely you'd be backing him to do a similar demolition job that he's done to most fighters, unless Murray can really pull off a spectacular performance. So Macklin's probably going to have the options if he wants to return. I don't see him returning for a competitive fight that he could have against the likes of Gary Spike O'Sullivan or some other middleweights that could really test him, because I think he knows that it might be worth the sacrifice that's involved. Whereas if a world title opportunity's there against maybe Andy Lee, if he was willing to fight him, whether he wins or loses, then that's always going to be there to tempt him back into the ring. Looking at his performances, very good point by Eric. It's been a few years since he's really delivered a performance where you actually could consider him to be world class. So it's a factor that has to be taken into account. In terms of the Andy fight, is it a realistic one at this stage? Probably depends on Andy's result against Karabov.
You see, the tide is kind of, it's to and fro between Macklin and Andy right through their career. You know, when Andy Lee lost to Brian Vera, Macklin held the cards, and then Andy had a couple of wins and got back and avenged that loss to Brian Vera, and then Matt Macklin lost to Sergio Martinez and Felix Sturm, the world title. So it was kind of to and fro, and now it seems to be back in Andy Lee's hands again. So really, it's probably the only fight left there for Matthew Macklin that the public would really like to see him in. I don't think, look, the boxing public, they're wise enough people. They know when a boxer has kind of come to the end, or if there's anything left in him. The thing is with Matthew, all of his fights have been hard, hard, tough fights. He's took a lot of punches. He's gave a lot of punches. He's went 12 rounds with many of guys. And I know he has a lot of knockouts on his record as well, but he's been in with the best. He has avoided nobody. And I think if there's any one fight I would like to see him in, it would be a domestic dust-up with Andy Lee. It wouldn't bother me whether there was titles at stake or anything. Just for the fans, I think maybe just him and Andy, just to sign off with one fight for the fans. But if it's not Andy Lee, I don't think he should continue to box.
Yeah,
I think Matthew's kind of indicated that he's probably going to take a few weeks or a few months and listen to the body, because that probably is something that's in his mind. He's had a few tough training camps, also had the fight against Gill that collapsed when he was probably in the middle of training for a big fight, delayed him further. It's bound to all have physical effects before he finally makes up his mind and ultimately makes that decision, probably listening to whether he's able to box on or whether he feels that he's physically capable of competing at the level he wants to be at.
Okay, we wish him the best in whatever he decides, and maybe we will see Matthew Macklin against Andy Lee in 2015. We want to kind of quickly touch on the Women's World Championships out in Jeju in Korea now, just for a minute. Unfortunately, we can't do too much because of just time dates and stuff like that. By the time our podcast comes out, a lot of the fights will have moved on. Katie Taylor will have met Sofia Ochagava, her great rival. Erica, a girl that you prepared Katie for fighting, you know, as a southpaw in your sparring before. Unfortunately, this morning we found that Michaela Walsh had been eliminated in the last 16 by Azerbaijan on a split decision, so she'll be absolutely gutted by that, and hard luck to Michaela. In the very first day of action, Joanne Lamb was defeated as well. I had to feel for Claire Grace, the welterweight from Callan Club in Kilkenny. She had to pull out after getting a cut over her eye. They thought she could box on, but she had to pull out, and she didn't get the box in the last 16. She was just two victories from a medal, and you never know, she could have pulled it off. It would have been a massive achievement for the Callan Club in Kilkenny. So mixed fortunes for the Irish team in Jeju, and the Four Tums boxing team will have more news for you on Katie's quest next week.
So looking at this weekend's action, another busy schedule on the pro scene. I suppose on this side of the Atlantic, the big attention is being paid to Bellew against Cleverly, the pay-per-view show. We've also got Pacquiao against Algieri. So, I mean, there's plenty of big fights to discuss at the weekend, gents.
Yeah, huge. You know, it's been a huge month of boxing overall, Kieran. And, you know, particularly the one this weekend has been the one people have been gearing up for. But I still don't agree with the pay-per-view event. That's just my own personal opinion. Two guys fought for a world title in their last outings. Both came up short. Both were stopped. Bellew and Cleverly. So they're boxing now. It's a repeat. Cleverly, Bellew 2. You know, Cleverly won the first fight. There's no doubt it was a great fight. Absolutely great fight. I watched it. I enjoyed every minute of it. But I still don't agree with the pay-per-view event this time. But, look, that's just the way it is. But there's an undercard on it, and it has potential to be a classic. It really does. As far as predictions, I'm not going to sit on the fence in this one. I'm going to pick Cleverly again. I've boxed with Bellew, and I've been
I kind of boxed in the same shows, same championships as him throughout my amateur career, and I was never really convinced by him, and I haven't been convinced either in the since he switched over to professional game. I believe he talks the talk, and he's had some really good performances, there's no doubt about that, but I just feel he's not got that ingredient to operate at elite level.
I'm going to go for Cleverley points on a Pacquiao stoppage win this weekend. I think they're my picks.
Yeah, I remember for the first Belly Cleverley fight, I also thought it was a really great fight, and from memory I think I was actually sitting on the fence. I think I scored it a draw. I thought Belly performed really well, but this time around it does have the look as though Cleverley seems, I suppose you alluded to earlier, Eric, over Gary Spike O'Sullivan before the Fitzgerald fight, another big rivalry. He was the cool head heading into it, and Cleverley seems to kind of have that kind of cool head heading into this match as well. Do you think that's important for such a big rivalry, or does it depend on each kind of matchup to itself?
Hugely important. Like, there's no doubt that we have to try and be aggressive. I think all elite sports people have to have aggression no matter what they do. Funnily enough, Klinsmann alluded to it there when he spoke about the Americans' performance against Ireland in the football the other night. He said we need to be a little bit more nasty, we've got to have more aggression, you know, we're too nice on the field. Boxers need that aggression. This is boxing, and there's no doubt both boxers have it, but you also have to be controlled. As I said, I've alluded to it in past podcasts as well when I spoke about Anthony Fitzgerald. Yeah, he talks the talk, but you need to be able to kind of control yourself. You have to channel that energy. Spike said it here earlier on. He said, a week to 10 days, I kind of stop, I control myself, and I try not to waste any energy. So I don't, you know, I don't get involved in unnecessary behaviors or altercations. I just try and channel all my energy into a positive frame of mind and into positive condition. And I think that's what's happening here with Cleverley and Bellew. Bellew is really one for trash talk. He loves that. That's his experience. That's what he does, and he does it so well. But Cleverley is the one who's been world champion. That's the difference.
The other big fight the weekend, you mentioned there, Pacquiao win is what you're going for, Kev. I think in advance of Algieri's last fight against Provodnikov, I think I mentioned that Provodnikov was a dead cert for a knockout, looking at what I consider to be a slightly padded record for Algieri, but obviously wasn't the case. Put in quite a gutsy performances and really managed to see out a few tough rounds to get a win. Why so certain about Pacquiao?
I don't believe that Algieri kind of belongs in the same ring as Pacquiao. There's so many more better opponents out there for Pacquiao to be fighting. It's just because of the Top Rank and Golden Boy rivalry and all the stuff between, you know, Showtime and HBO and having to fight in Macau. There's so many different opponents ruled out, and Pacquiao's fought an awful lot of guys as well, so you're having to head into rematch territory. You know, like, what's the point in fighting Bradley for the third time, even though he's one of the world's leading welterweights? And I mean, doesn't seem to be a big desire to see him in against Marquez again. There probably is, but how many times do these guys have to fight, you know? And the Mayweather fight doesn't look like happening, then there's other fighters that are unavailable to him, such as, you know, Keith Thurman. And anyway, I'm going away from the fight. I like the look of Algieri. He looks like a game guy. He's got an interesting career. I see, you know, he's a late developer, he's got 2 degrees, he's fierce, entertaining, he's got a very interesting backstory. I don't know how entertaining he is as a boxer. He's clearly quite brave. He was hurt against Provodnikov. His eye looked like it was going to stop him and he kept going, but Pacquiao's going to absolutely pepper him. Pacquiao's far, far, far superior to Provodnikov. Provodnikov's got a lot going for him. You know, I wouldn't like to step in with him. You know, he wouldn't like to step in with either of them, Eric, to be honest with you.
Pacquiao is one of my favourite boxers of all time. You know, I have many favourite boxers. There's not one particular boxer I like more than, I suppose, others, but Pacquiao is really one of my favourites. He really is one of my top three favourite boxers. I just love everything about him. I love his persona, how he carries himself, his lifestyle in the ring and outside the ring, and just his boxing ability, how he's jumped up to the weights. But what he's took with him is he's amassed this skill of counter punching, speed, aggression, and how he does it. He does it just so controlled, and he would, without doubt, is one of my best boxers of all time, and I can see him winning again against Algeria. I can't see him losing.
Yeah, I think looking at the Brandon Rios performance as well from Pacquiao, it was fairly convincing that he's probably has a bit of a renewed hunger and a bit of a desire to really set the record straight and make sure he secures his legacy towards the end of his career. But we've had a busy show so far, and we're in the Celtic Warriors gym. We're also going to hear from a few other heads that have performed here well. That looks like John O'Carroll, hopefully in a few weeks' time we'll have a chat with him and get him on the podcast as well, and a gym that's performing well, Kev.
Yeah, a star was born in Spike with that knockout. Like, I mean, you can get all the knockouts of Robbie Long you want in the National Stadium, and we were there looking at it, and it was really impressive. But knocking out a big time rival on Sky Sports, just it creates a star.
Another man who's been, I suppose, what you consider a warrior of Irish boxing for a few years is Ian Timms. He had an unfortunate ending for his fight against Drago, a bit of an injury there for him.
God, it was hard not to feel for him. Like, Timms has had his big domestic derby with Michael Sweeney cancelled at the 11th hour before the return of the MAC card. Gets in the ring against absolute beast of a looking man in Paul Drago, but injured his ankle in the first round, and he's hobbling around here on crutches, and I think he's torn his ankle ligaments. So it's unfortunate, and that could be it for him in boxing. But hopefully, for Timms' sake, I think Timms does retain the desire to box on, and hopefully, you know, has the hunger in the new year to go again.
Well, hopefully he has a quick recovery anyway. Luke Keeler as well made a bit of an impact there too.
Yeah, his first round knockout display against a usually quite tough guy in Gary Bolden endeared him to the fans who already come out and support him quite passionately, and most importantly, I guess, the main man, Eddie Hearn, because Eddie Hearn is the kingmaker at the minute, and if he wants to come back, he's going to rely on people like Luke Keeler to push the momentum forward. Will he return? He said to us afterwards that he will return in 2015, but not in the spring. The defeat of Macklin was sad for us all to see, but even for Eddie Hearn, who kind of was looking out in the crowd and thinking, I can make a few quid out of these people, probably, because that's the point of boxing promotion. It was probably sadder for him, because he all of a sudden his best laid plans for April or March or whatever it were up in smoke, and that could be it for Dublin boxing for another year. Like, Eric, I want to finish up with you've got the Twitter handles, or you've got the names of some of the people who were the most correct in our Kovalev Bernard Hopkins preview. We put out a tweet asking for who'd win and how. Unfortunately, we didn't get to cover it last week because we just had a one-off special with Matthew Macklin.
In summary, all three of us were wrong, so who was right?
We've a couple of guys who picked the right victor, but not exactly the right score or result. But look, they got the right victor, so I just want to honour my word and give them a shout out. So the shout out goes to Martin Fennessy and Anthony Upton Jr. How are you, lads? And well done on your prediction in picking the right winner.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to the Four Thumbs Irish Boxing Podcast. Hopefully, see you again soon.